Now, if you'll turn with me, please, to the first chapter of Daniel. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, into Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And the king spoke unto Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of the princes, youths in whom was no blemish, but well favored, and skillful in all wisdom, and gifted in knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's food and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end of them they might stand before the king. Now among these were of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and to Hananiah of Shadrach, and to Mishael of Meshach, and to Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's food, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and compassion with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who hath appointed your food and your drink, for why should he see your faces worse looking than the youths who are of your age? Then shall ye make me endanger my head with the king. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, test thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenances of the youths that eat of the portion of the king's food, and as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and tested them 10 days. And at the end of 10 days their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the youths who did eat the portion of the king's food. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their food and the wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for these youths, these 4 youths, God gave them knowledge and skill in all wisdom, learning and wisdom. And Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king conversed with them. And among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. Daniel continued unto the first year of King Cyrus. God willing, I'd like in this little session of meetings that we're having to look in these first chapters of Daniel. I'm not saying that we're going to have time to deal with every chapter, but what I had before me was to look at what we can learn from this chapter, and particularly through the life of Daniel, as to how God can enable us to live faithfully for him, doing our ordinary job, doing our ordinary work, in our occupations and in our daily lives, even in circumstances which are outwardly very difficult and very testing and very trying. I don't think any of us will have to face, at least it doesn't appear so at the very moment we're living, circumstances like Daniel had to face. But nevertheless, we're in a hostile environment. We're in a country and an area which is under the power of the prince of this world. Our Lord is rejected. We're strangers and pilgrims, as Peter says when he wrote to those scattered Jews, and we stand in the same position. And yet God can enable us, as he enabled these five people of whom we read, to stand faithfully for him as a testimony, as a little remnant, so to speak, amidst an alien situation, and to bring out that which was for his glory and to establish his rights in that vast empire of which Nebuchadnezzar and later on other kings were the rulers. Well, if God could do it in that day, he can do it in our day. And so we're going to try and learn some of the principles underlying. Now, the chapter we have before us today is really a sort of introductory chapter, bringing before us these people and their situation. But still, there's very much to learn from it. Just a little bit about the background that's brought before us in the first couple of verses. If you read in Kings and Chronicles, you'll find the whole history and bits of it in other of the prophecies of how Nebuchadnezzar attacked Jerusalem, attacked the whole land, but in particular how he attacked the city of Jerusalem. There were three main attacks. The first one in the end of King Jehoiakim's reign. Jehoiakim reigned for quite a long time in Judah, and Nebuchadnezzar came to him at the end of his reign. Then later on, in the reign of his son Jehoiachin, I pronounce it like that so that we distinguish it. I don't know how it was actually pronounced, but it's spelt with chin at the end, so we'll leave it like that. Jehoiachin reigned for a very, very short time, and he was actually captured and taken away with all the royal household and the goods and things from the temple. And then latterly, when Zedekiah was king, came the final clearing up of everything and the taking away of the whole thing and the destruction of Jerusalem. Well, our story begins here at the beginning of those attacks of King Nebuchadnezzar. It actually says that the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with parts of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar. I don't know how we reconcile it, but in the historical books, it seems that that actually happened in the reign of Jehoiachin. But as he only reigned 3 months, it seems that they're sort of condensed together here, and it was possibly at that time that Daniel was taken away captive. The historical books don't tell us anything about the things being taken from the temple or the princes being taken in Jehoiakim's reign. But actually, of course, Jehoiachin only came on the throne for three months, and he was carried away very quickly after, and that's when it happened. And so we have this situation with Daniel there as a young boy carried away captive into a foreign land along with a few of his friends. Now, what's going to happen to him? How to begin? How to begin? Here, I wonder if we can try to picture this young man. We don't know how old he was. probably just an early teenager, 13 or 14 years old probably, rooted up from his own circumstances, carried in a brutal way right across country, right into a foreign land with a foreign language, brought into this situation, and then finding himself chosen out to be trained and educated so that he could stand before this great monarch and be one of his wise men, one of his astrologers or magicians or whatever you might like to call them. He was going to be trained in all the knowledge of the Babylonians so that he could take his place in the Babylonian court. Quite a terrifying situation it would be for such a young man. Surrounded by others, Babylonian princes who were speaking the language and who were quite prepared to go along with the things, and there he had his four Jewish friends with him. How is he going to stand for the God that he knows in such a circumstance? He was a Jew. He knew God. He knew God's laws. He loved God. How is he going to put it into practice in this difficult, strange, foreign situation? How did he begin? Verse 8. Daniel purposed in his heart that he wouldn't defile himself with the king's meat. That's where it started. It started in his heart with a heart determination. He didn't know the answer. He didn't know how it was going to happen. But he preliminarily made a determined resolution, probably just between himself and the Lord, that somehow he was going to walk a pathway which would be honoring to God. That's a grand start. And that's where so many of us, as we've looked back over our past lives, and as we see others around us, that's often where we make our first step. We don't make a stand straight away with a determination as we move into a new situation that we're going to hold that situation for God. Now, possibly these addresses will be directed particularly to younger people, but I'm sure that each one of us, older than we're the younger ones, will be able to gain profit from them. If you want a proof of that, the last verse says that Daniel went on till the third year of Cyrus, and by that time he must have been well over 80. So it isn't only about young Daniel, it's about Daniel as he gets older as well. But this is how he started. It's so sad when we find young people who've been brought up in the meetings, brought to the Lord, and are going on nicely, and then they go to college, they go to university, they go to work in another area where they're away from home, and possibly where they haven't the company of Christians around them, or they haven't the support of the local assembly. And when they come back, we find that they've drifted away. Not necessarily from the Lord, but they haven't stood for the things that they know to be right. Daniel is a wonderful example of how to stand for God in such a situation. You see, Daniel was going to college really, wasn't he? 3 years of it, just like teacher training. We haven't progressed very much further, have we? It takes us quite as long to train people nowadays as it did poor old Nebuchadnezzar to train his students. Puts them to college for 3 years. That was his idea. Well, what was the problem? What was the problem? Well, here it was specific in relation to the food that was given to him. Well, it's picture language, if you like, when we come to the Old Testament, and we have to try and interpret it into a spiritual language when we're applying it to ourselves. See, the Old Testament Jewish religion was based on material things, on material sacrifices, on material restrictions about what they ate, but they all had a meaning. And for the godly Jew, he had to obey them if he was going to serve and love God. And one of those restrictions, of course, as you know, was about what he had to eat. He was only allowed to eat certain animals that were clean. He was only allowed to drink certain things. He wasn't allowed to drink strong drink if he was a separated one for God. And certainly he wasn't allowed to mix his food with idolatrous worship of any kind. He had to be completely free from idolatry. And here was Daniel faced with this situation where he was being offered, in fact, what was being forced upon him was to eat food. He didn't know what sort of food it was. It might have been any animal, clean or unclean. It had probably been offered to an idol. And as far as the drink was concerned, it would probably be strong drink. What was he going to do? I think Mr. Wallace, in one of his series of talks on this, has called this chapter The Meddling Monarch. Because here was Nebuchadnezzar determined to make these people, Jews or his own people, all the same. Listen what he says. He wanted to make them so that he could teach them the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. That's the way the world always works. When it gets Christians into its company, it doesn't mind them being there, so long as they'll conform. So long as they'll take on the patterns of thinking and the patterns of speaking and the patterns of acting of the world. The world will go on quite happily with the believers so long as they'll be conformed to the world. That's what Nebuchadnezzar was trying to do, to conform these Jews to the pattern of the Chaldeans, make them speak their language, make them learn their learning. That's a great danger. That's why Paul, when he was writing to the Romans, says, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Ever so important what goes into our minds. It's underlined by the fact that they had their names changed. Oh, yes. That's just what the world wants to do when it gets you into its company. Wants to change your name. You're a Christian. You belong to Christ. You're his. He wants to change that to give you another name. Not literally, I don't mean that. But he wants you to take on the pattern that doesn't belong to Christ. Daniel, God is my judge. Or God's judge. Mishael, who is like God. Hananiah, Jehovah graciously gave. Azariah, Jehovah helps. You see, these four men, by their very names, were a testimony in the Babylonian court to the God they served. And so you and I should be. As we move amongst the world and as we mix with others in the world, our very character, that's what our names speak of, before we open our mouths, so to speak, our very character should speak of the God that we own. But Melzar was quite, the prince of the eunuchs no, it wasn't Melzar, was it? It was the prince of the eunuchs, who realized that this wouldn't do for Nebuchadnezzar to have people with names like that in his court, so he changed them. And he gave them Babylonian names. I don't know what they all mean, but they all have something to do with the Babylonian gods. Abednego means servant of Nego, and Belteshazzar means, O Bel, preserve the king. So they all had something to do with his gods. You see, he was going to conform them to his way of thinking and to his lifestyle and get them eventually serving his gods. Well, how does Daniel set about putting into practice this decision that he'd made? You see, in Daniel's case, it was a question of food on a plate. It doesn't matter what food we eat, as the Lord tells us in his story, in his discourse with his disciples. This is not a question of diet or anything like that. Read Romans if you want to get the spiritual answer to that. It's not a question of diet at all. This is a spiritual matter of what we allow to go in, not just into our bodies, but what are we allowing to go into our minds and into our lives, which is going to mold our character. That's what food speaks of. The world, the man of the world, the woman of the world, the boy and girl of the world, what do they allow to go in? They allow the world's learning, the world's ideas, man's thoughts, man's science, man's knowledge to go in. They allow their entertainment to be governed by the standards of the world and by what the world can produce and what ungodly men can bring forward. And it goes into their minds, into their lives, and it colours their character and changes their names. Now you and I, as believers, we have to guard very jealously what we allow to go into our minds. If you read the epistles, you'll find time and time and time and time again the word mind comes in, particularly in the epistles to Timothy and Titus. The things that go into our minds have got to be governed, because our mind controls the whole of our bodies and our thinking. We've got to be careful what we listen to, what we look at, what we allow to go in as learning. Being educated, we have to learn what's set before us, but we've got to be careful what we allow to settle there and what we allow to become part of us and believe it. We may have to take certain things in order that we can put them down on the exam paper, but we don't have to let them become part of us. We don't have to let them become part of our belief. We've got to be like Daniel and be wise in order that we might discriminate and walk in true separation to God. And how did he do it? How did he start to put his determination, which was in his heart, how did he work it out in practice? Look at verse 9. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and compassion with the prince of the eunuchs. Very simple little verse, isn't it? And we could easily overlook it. But I think it spells out a very great deal of Daniel's behavior. He's going to have to ask for a very great favor. He doesn't do it immediately. What does he do first of all? Well, he was very like Joseph. Wherever Joseph was put, he worked as hard as he could and he did his job as well as he could. If he was in his father's house and sent out to look and bring the report about his brothers, he brought a true report. nearly cost him his life. When he was in Potiphar's house, he worked so hard that Potiphar put everything into his hands. And when the test came, he was prepared to lose everything to stand straight for God. And he got put in prison. And what happened when he was in prison? He worked so hard and he worked so faithfully that God put all the prisoners under his charge. And so when the time came that they wanted someone to interpret Pharaoh's dreams, Joseph was brought out. And Joseph was put in charge of the whole kingdom. And then he packed up then and he said, "Now, well, I've got here now, well, I might as well have an easy time." Did he? No, he worked just as hard as he had done in Potiphar's house, as he had done in the prison. And he worked things out for Pharaoh because he had God behind him and he was really working for God. He worked for Pharaoh until he could hand over the whole land to Pharaoh and put it into Pharaoh's hand. What a man Joseph was. I know he's a type of the Lord. But he was an actual man living. Now, Daniel did a little like that, I think. He had behaved himself so sensibly and worked so hard and been such an amiable, happy, pleasant sort of person that God had brought him into favor with the prince of the eunuchs. Those of you who are teachers know that one of the dangers, especially in junior school, of teaching is to have favorites. Very difficult sometimes when you have a class of children not to have favorites. You do inside, but you don't have to show it. Because there's always the child who seems to do everything right, who wants to work, who wants to learn, who wants to please. And naturally you can't help but have a happy feeling towards them. There's another child who won't do a thing, who always does the wrong thing, who always gets under your skin. And you can't help feeling miserable towards them, although you don't try to show it. Try not to show it. But here was Daniel working in such a way that he was brought into compassion and favor with this foreign governor, the prince of the eunuchs. Tells us an awful lot about Daniel's character. And as we trace him through, we find that goes on all the way through his life, right until he was an old man. So that's how he started, by making sure that his very life was a testimony. You won't be a testimony to anybody if you're a miserable sort of person, if you're always finding fault, if you're always grumbling. You'll be no testimony to anyone, whatever you might feel about God inside. So Daniel went on the right road like that. No, he didn't rebel. He didn't get a union together or a protest party. He just got on with his job quietly, as he was told. And then he had to make the move, of course. And so eventually, in verse 8, because verse 9 is an explanation of verse 8, he requested the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Just notice the tone of that little sentence. He requested the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Daniel recognized that he was under authority. He recognized that this man had been put in charge of him and that he had to submit to him. And so he went in that sort of attitude to him. He didn't go telling him what he was going to do or telling him what he ought to do or even sticking up for his rights and saying, "I'm a Jew, I can't eat this food." He quietly went up to him and politely he requested him that he might not eat this food. And of course he would have to explain why. He recognized that he was in an inferior position And this person had put in charge of him, and so he honored him. And the prince of the eunuchs then acted in the same way towards Daniel. Instead of giving an outright no, he tried to explain to Daniel, well, look, this is a very dangerous thing you're asking. If I do what you ask me to do and don't let you eat the king's food, and then the king sees that you're going down in health, well, I shall lose my job. I might even lose my head. And I think the implication surely is there that if I lose my head, Daniel, you'll lose yours as well. He was putting before Daniel the dangerousness of the situation. Now, Daniel, what are you going to do when you see how dangerous this thing is that you've asked? And here comes Daniel's third point. Daniel cast himself back on God. He took his own name. God is my judge. And Daniel said in his heart, so to speak, well, I'll let God sort the matter out. I'll put it into God's hands and I'll take God's answer. So he said, well, test your servants for 10 days and let them eat pulse and drink water. Different translations give different words for that word pulse. Some say vegetables, some say beans. I don't know what it was exactly, but it was obviously some very meager sort of meal or something that they were able to eat, which they could be quite sure didn't come under any of those defiling categories. It couldn't possibly be from an unclean animal. It was some vegetable matter. It wouldn't have been offered to an idol because they wouldn't have deemed that worthy of offering to an idol. And so they were quite clear that this would be suitable food for them to eat. But it must have been a very, very poor and a very uninteresting sort of diet, mustn't it? Porridge and water, day in, day out. Well, he tried them for 10 days. And you notice Daniel left the matter in the hands of God. He said, try us for 10 days. Sorry, I've just lost the verse. Verse 13, that's right. As thou seest, deal with thy servants. Thank you, Dom. As thou seest, deal with thy servants. In other words, Daniel didn't know really how it was going to turn out. He put the matter in the hands of God, and he was quite prepared to go along with the answer that God gave. That's faith. That's faith. Faith isn't telling God what to do. Faith isn't putting God in a cleft stick so that he has to answer. Some people think that if they shout loud enough and if they say their prayers in a definite enough sort of way, that God's got to answer them. That's not faith. Faith is asking God and leaving the answer with him. That's what Daniel did. And God honors that faith. And so at the end of 10 days, when they tested them, they found that they were better. They were fatter in flesh than all the youths that did eat, fairer and fatter in flesh than all the youths that did eat the portion of the king's meat. Well, so far, so good. It's one thing to make a stand for the Lord at camp or in a convention and determine then, this is the way I'm going to go. Yes, from now on, I'm going to be all out for the Lord. For 10 days you are. I'm sure we've all had that sort of experience in our Christian lives. And we have to regret so often that it comes to a rather sticky, fizzling out end. We all have spiritual sort of uplifts, and we determine that we're going to go on more for the Lord and do more for the Lord and serve the Lord more faithfully. That's good in its way. The 10 days test was good, test of their faith. But then Melzar said, right, we'll take it away and you can have it for 3 years. Now what about it? That was the real test. Not just a flash in the pan for 10 days, but the one who goes on serving the Lord, increasingly serving the Lord, goes on faithfully, committed, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 40 years, as some here have. That's the test of commitment to the Lord. And so they went on. And God answered their faithfulness and their commitment. You see, if we are prepared to give our devotion and our service and our lives to the Lord may lead us a hard way, but he'll be faithful to us. And so he was to these four men. These five altogether, weren't they? At the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Ah, but they were ready, weren't they? As for these four youths, God gave them knowledge and skill, listen, in all learning and wisdom. What was Nebuchadnezzar going to teach them? The learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. I think they got that as well. I think God gave them the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. I dare say by this time they could speak Chaldean to Nebuchadnezzar. And they knew a good deal about this, all the learning of the Chaldeans, but God didn't stop there. God gives abundance when he gives. He gave them knowledge in all learning and wisdom. Then he added a bonus for Daniel. He gave him understanding of visions and dreams. And that was, of course, the way God was training this man, because, of course, that's the book of Daniel's all about, isn't it? Daniel comes out later on as the leader. He probably was the leader. It was Daniel's exercise, as we say, in the first place that led these other four along with him. But they fell in with his leadership. And so they were brought before Nebuchadnezzar. What a day this must have been for these four, five men. They'd been trained, they'd been brought in this way for these 3 years, and now comes graduation day. Well, you know, if you go to university or college, the exam day and graduation day is a great day, isn't it? But actually, in our graduation day, the big thing's all over, isn't it? It's just the paraphernalia that's left behind. But it wasn't here. They were going to be examined personally by this great monarch who held everything in his hands, life and death in his hands. He only had to say, well, you've wasted your time, off with your head, and it would have been done. You can imagine these men coming in front of this great monarch. You know, it's one thing to stand for the Lord in company with others, and there is scriptural backing for the fact that when we go out in testimony, we should seek the fellowship of others. But the time comes when we have to stand on our own. And I believe that Nebuchadnezzar talked to these men separately, because it mentions their names separately. It goes through their names again. It doesn't just bunch them as a crowd. Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah stood before the king and he conversed with them. Now comes the test as to how much what they had done collectively was individual in their lives. You see, it's one thing to be for the Lord when we're in the meeting and when we gather together like this, and it's easy to sing hymns, and to acknowledge that we belong to the Lord. But when we're on our own with someone else conversing with us, that's where the real test comes. And these men came out fine, didn't they? In all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and all the astrologers that were in all his realm. And it was Nebuchadnezzar that was learning something that day. Nebuchadnezzar was beginning, this is the first lesson that God taught Nebuchadnezzar. God, in his wisdom and in his grace and in his governmental dealings, had taken the government from Israel, from Jerusalem, and he'd set this man Nebuchadnezzar up as the first of the Gentile rulers. He'd put the whole known world under his hand. He'd given him authority and power and might, as we'll see in these later chapters. But he was going to teach Nebuchadnezzar some very, very severe and hard lessons. This was the first one. Nebuchadnezzar was going to take these men, teach them the tongue of the Chaldeans, and he was going to make them like the Chaldeans. And when Nebuchadnezzar tested them, he had to admit, I haven't changed them. They're still Jews, they still believe in their God, they've still got their old names. And my teaching has failed. There's a God greater than my gods. He was just beginning to get that inkling of someone who had a knowledge and a wisdom and an understanding greater than any of his gods, who could put into these 4 men 10 times more wisdom than was in all those that had just come through his channels alone. It wasn't peculiar to Daniel's day. Here's a verse from Psalm 119. Oh, how I love thy law. It's verse 97. Oh, how I love thy law. It is my meditation all the day. I think that must have been Daniel's experience. Thou, through thy commandments, hast made me wiser than mine enemies, for they are ever with me. That is, his commandments are ever with him. I have more understanding than all my teachers, for thy testimonies are my meditation. And surely Daniel could say that as he stood before Nebuchadnezzar with his 4 friends. I have more understanding than all my teachers. Then we have this little bit at the end. Daniel continued unto the first year of King Cyrus. You see, this is a summary, as I said, and it goes from the beginning of Daniel's life, and then it just brings us up to the end and shows us that this wasn't just a beginning. Daniel went on in this pattern of life until he was an old man. He must have been a very old man. From history, I think the reign of Jehoiakim ended in about, as far as we can gather, about BC 604. And Cyrus started to reign in 537. If you take the one from the other, that means the 67 years between what we've been reading about here, when Daniel was captured, and when he finished at the end. If he did finish, it doesn't say that he finished then. He continued until then. Actually, chapter 10 says he was still there in the 3rd year of Cyrus, and he might have gone on even longer than that. Well, you think 67 years. If he was 13 when he was brought in, that makes him 80, doesn't it? And he might have been even older than that. What a wonderful testimony Daniel is of a man who determined in his heart that he wouldn't defile himself with the things of this world. that he would hold himself a Nazarite for God, separated from that which is defiling, and move on for God. And God honored him. And as we go through these chapters, I don't know quite which chapters we'll be able to touch on. Depends how many opportunities you give me. I can't quite see how we can get another 5 chapters into 3 or 4 meetings. But we'll try. We'll see which ones appear to come out the most profitable.